They had to be seriously undergunned. They hadn't jumped Ryan and the others because of the quality of the companion's blasters. They weren't eager to face all that concentrated firepower. Jack also knew that three things had kept the Cannies from abandoning the hunt altogether. The three children. And especially the baby. Cannies loved baby. Horrible images flooded Jack's mind. Flashback images of his own infant girl, after she'd been smashed to death against the side of his homestead barn in New Mexico. Of his wife Christina, brutally raped and murdered on the floor of their homestead cabin. Though he and Ryan and the others had hunted down and chilled the marauders who had butchered his family, it wasn't enough. Revenge could never balance out what had been taken from him. Beneath the deep layers of scar tissue on the teenager's soul, there was a place that would remain forever wounded, bleeding. Tragedies like Jack's weren't unusual in Deathlands. They were instead the hard and fast rule. He had learned early on that the hellscape had an insatiable appetite for the innocent, the good, and the helpless. To do something about it was to fight against fate, to battle one-on-one with the nuke wind or the chem rain. Sooner or later, you were bound to lose. Even Jack, a born warrior, a true child of Deathlands, couldn't protect his own loved ones from its savagery. Though he couldn't put his feelings into words, perhaps more than any of the other companions, he wanted to see the young family make it to the safety of Perditionville. He crossed the lane of tracks and moved low and quick through the bordering line of willows. One stream channel over, running full out, he began to parallel the Canny's course. He figured the flesh-eaters were trying to reach a place that would give them the greatest possible advantage for their attack, maybe a particularly narrow and steep-sided channel with heavily treed islands on either side, a spot where they could use close quarters and their superior numbers to overrun and overwhelm the companions. The teen had sprinted about 75 yards when behind him and off to the left, Benji's single-shot 12-gauge boomed sharply. He skidded to a stop as the gunshot echoes rolled over the floodplain. After the echoes faded away, there was silence.
Reload. Reload.
It was as close to prayer as Jack Lauren got. The silence stretched on and on. The sound of the lone shotgun blast set Ryan into motion. The one-eyed man didn't have to wave for the others to follow. Weapons at the ready, they fell into a loose skirmish line behind him as he raced back down the stream channel, retreating toward the source of the gunshot. Under different circumstances, Ryan would have most certainly gone the other way. If he and his friends hadn't been hobbled by the farmers and their kids, their best option for survival would have been to light out for perdition, to rely on foot speed and firepower, as they had so many times before. But they didn't have that luxury this day. A running firefight was out of the question with the burden of Uda and the little girls. They really only had one choice if they wanted to live. They had to quickly close ranks with the rear guard, then, with their force maximized, stand and fight. No more gunshots split the air. The only sounds, the tramp of their boots as they ran down the riverbed. The lack of follow-up shotgun blasts didn't bode well for Benji. Though there were other possible explanations for his firing just the once, given the situation and his inexperience, none of the alternatives was very likely. Cannies didn't know the meaning of the word mercy. Inhuman cruelties were part and parcel of their feasting. If the dirt farmer was rad-blasted lucky, Ryan thought, he had already taken the last train west. As was their custom, the companions didn't waste breath speculating about the man's fate. They proceeded in grim silence. Uda had to have figured it out for herself, because she put forth an extra effort, and baby and all somehow managed to keep up. For Ryan and the others, the only question that remained was, what had happened to Jack? Jack closed in on the scuffling, grunting animal sounds filtering up the arroyo. Those sounds told him Benji was already beyond help. With his .357 Magnum Colt Python leading the way, Jack circled downwind. When he was one stream channel away from the ruckus, he crawled through a stand of willows and, keeping to the shadows, peered out through the screen of low branches. A dozen Cannies huddled in the middle of the stream bed, bending over and grabbing at something limp that lay in the sand. Arms pumping, the Kennys were fighting like wild beasts over the last gobbets of flesh on Benji's skeleton. One look at their weaponry told Jack he'd been right about their lack of firepower. They had a few black powder hand blasters, a couple of homemade crossbows built out of auto leaf springs, but it was mostly knives and clubs. And it was with the knives that they were scraping away at what little was left of the dirt farmer. All the noise didn't seem to worry the Kennys one bit. Maybe they didn't figure their other potential victims would come back for a straggler. Or perhaps they were counting on the refugees to run like hell for perdition. At any rate, Jack thought, they figured it was plenty safe enough to take the time to make a meal out of poor Benji. They were dead wrong. Knowing that help was fast on the way, and not wanting any of the Coldhearts to escape, Jack jumped from cover with a big handgun and a rock-solid two-handed grip. His abrupt entrance went barely noticed. Only three of the Kennys bothered to glance up from their feast, fresh blood smeared over their faces and hands. Perhaps their comrades had been made sluggish by the big meal they were finishing, or they were just too pig-greedy to pay attention. One of the three made a grab for the Colt 3rd Dragoon strapped to his hip, the Kenny's wet fingers slipping on the pistol grip. Before he got the .44's barrel clear of leather, the .357 barked and bucked in Jack's hands. The Magnum slug sailed through the flesh-eater's open mouth. His head snapped back, gory chin pointing skyward, and in the same instant, the rear of his skull exploded, spraying pink mist over his stunned fellows. They didn't stay stunned for long. A crossbow bolt harmlessly swished past Jack's right ear. The teenager shifted his aim point and fired again. The cannibal archer sat hard in the sand, clutching at a small dark hole along the midline of his chest, 3 inches below his Adam's apple. Exiting his back, the soft-nosed Magnum slug had taken with it big chunks of his airway and spinal column. The through-and-through had sufficient force to bowl over another canny, hitting him square in the head as he tried to rise from over Benji's corpse. There was no wet plume of flying brains this time, as there wasn't enough velocity left in the slug to make an exit wound. Trapped inside the canny's skull, a flattened, razor-edged bullet ricocheted off the inside of that bony vault, zigzagging back and forth, cutting great swaths through his gray matter, and he dropped as if all his strings had been cut. Jack caught the bright white glint of sun on steel and reacted. He fired again before the knife thrower could snap his arm forward. The blade dropped and the thrower crumpled, folding in around the final beat of his shredded heart. The last shot, and its deadly effect, made the remaining cannies abandon their meal. To Jack, some of the chillers seemed much more lively than others. Surprisingly lively. Before the teenager could fire again, the lively ones took off, scattering in all directions like a clutch of frightened spiders. The not-so-lively ones had difficulty slipping into the willows, thanks to the violent tremors that seized their arms and legs. Three of these horrid stumblers lurched toward Jack with clubs raised, mindless of his death-spitting python. Gruesome leers twisted their blood-daubed faces, lips drawn and tight on one side, drooping on the other, one eye bugging out, the other narrowed to a slit. Rather than waste ammo on them, Jack shifted the revolver to his left hand. A flat black leaf-bladed throwing knife appeared like magic between his fingers, then vanished in a blur. Again like magic, the short metal handle of the knife reappeared on the side of a canny's neck. It was a carotid hit. Blood jetted through fingers, clawing futilely at the deeply buried blade, but there was no way to stop the spurting flow. Before the second attacker could take another step, Jack put a black steel thorn through his right eye to the hilt. The canny fell to the sand in a shivering, shuddering fit. The third stumbler got the same treatment as the first, but he didn't try to pull the blade free of the arteries in his throat. As if grateful that the horror of his life had finally come to an end, he collapsed and died quietly, taking a slow, almost dignified seat beside the stand of willows before he slumped onto the sand. Finding himself alone in the stream channel, Jack stepped over to the remains of Benji's carcass. The dirt farmer's face was stripped to the skull, his jaws gaping in a tongueless, silent scream. The Kennys had taken everything from him. His life, his flesh, his scattergun and ammo, his boots, belt, and backpack. Left to themselves for a few more minutes, and they would have sucked the marrow from his bones. Out of sight, the scattered Kennys would regroup quickly, and when they realized he was on his own, they would come for him. Jack opened the Python's cylinder and dumped the three empties beside Benji's corpse. After thumbing in live rounds, he snapped the cylinder shut and set about retrieving his knives. The teenager had just freed the blade from the dead Kenny's eye